Here is a special reminder for our on-demand and podcast listeners. KFUO will be celebrating our worldwide ministry with Share-a-thon 2016, a three-day live event Thursday, April 21st through Saturday, April 23rd. Listen on our worldwide stream and on AM 850 KFUO in St. Louis. Join us and enjoy all the live fun, plus hear from some of your favorite on-air friends. Again, Share-a-thon 2016 is April 21st through April 23rd. If you can't listen live during our 3 days of Share-a-thon, remember you can support us online anytime at KFUO.org. Just click a Give Now button on our website, or you can email us and ask us about other giving options. Email gifts at KFUO.org. It's KFUO supporters like you who make these worldwide online programs possible. Please prayerfully consider supporting KFUO today. And thank you for listening and supporting KFUO.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We have a great topic ahead of us today. I mentioned earlier this week we have some topics that are pertinent to healthy life and caring for older friends and loved ones. But today we're going to cover a topic that covers both those older friends and loved ones, and as well as younger members of the family and community as well. Overcoming communication disorders. So excited to talk with a professional in this area, a speech pathologist. Her name is Rachel Weir. We'll talk with her in just a moment. Looking forward to learning about this profession and how to care for and serve those who might face some difficulties and challenges when it comes to communication. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO. You can find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. Look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin. Joining me in studio today, Rachel Weir. She's a speech pathologist and a good friend as well. Rachel, thanks for coming over to spend some time with us here on Faith and Family.
Good morning. Thank you for the invitation.
Love to. I always enjoy sitting around chatting with you. And I guess it's a chat today, but also a professional conversation about your work. What got you interested in this field of speech pathology?
I went to college actually as an undecided major, and I did my general studies, I went to an undecided majors fair, and there was a young woman, and she was in the graduate program in speech-language pathology at Eastern Illinois University, and she just had this passion that, I mean, I just was like, I got to be around this woman. I want to know what she's doing, and she really spoke to the different, obviously, all the age ranges that we work with, but also the different settings that really appealed to me. I wasn't really sure if I have both of my parents were in the education field, and I thought, well, you know, I like that. I definitely like the schedule, but I'm not sure. So I kind of like the flexibility of the different arenas that a speech therapist could work. And so I did some research after I saw her speak, and I mean, she pretty much sold it for me.
So going to college, as many students do, trying to think, what do I want to do? I know what I enjoy a lot of things. But what do I want to do? You meet this person that has just this great energy and passion for what she does. She loves doing it. You learn more about the career. And what did you find out? As you learned more about speech pathology and therapy, did you think, man, this is something I could really embrace? This is something that I would, this is a great way that I could serve others.
Absolutely. It also just, as I studied more about it, I thought the hospital aspect of it, the swallowing, the dysphagia therapy was very intriguing to me. It also, I thought how...
You're using big words, which is fine, but now we have to break those down.
That's
because
true.
I don't know what all those words mean. Perhaps our listeners do. But so you go in, you study in this field. What is, I guess before we get much further, what is speech pathology and therapy, and where does this all fit together? What is this field?
Well, it's the study of not only language, speech sounds, and cognitive abilities, and diagnosing and treating all of those things, as well as swallowing and stuttering disorders.
Wow.
I'm sure I forgot.
So have you diagnosed me with anything in the first five minutes?
Not yet.
Okay. Give me a few minutes here. So that's really quite a lot to study. And this was a four-year program or longer?
It is. To be a licensed speech therapist, you have to have a master's degree.
Wow. So this is, what did you study then as an undergrad to prepare for the master's degree?
As an undergraduate, you take courses we took a phonetics course, so that is meaning the sounds and kind of the patterns of the sounds in American speech, and also language, so how we learn to talk from as we're born, and also a little bit of more cognitive, language difficulties that adults can acquire. But most of it was just kind of the foundation. We didn't get very deep into any of those things. And when we went to graduate school, that was more of the treating and the diagnosing of those disorders.
That's a lot to take in, I'm sure. But over time, as you progress and learn, I gather, did you have practicums or field experience of some kind along the way, especially as an undergrad, learning, is this something I really want to do?
Yes, we did. As a senior in your undergrad, we observed graduate students with their clients. And then the final semester, we were able to get one client that we saw once a week in the therapy center. And then our graduate program, we did, while we were at the school, we had two clients each semester. And then our last year of graduate school was all practicums. We did 12 weeks in the school setting, and then 8 to 12 weeks in with the adult population, and you were able to pick, you could do an acute care hospital or more of a rehab hospital or a nursing home program.
So you can do a clinical or a medical type setting, a hospital setting,
yes,
or an education setting.
Correct.
As well. And you've served in both of those areas.
Yes,
as well.
Yes, I have.
Mm-hmm. What has been intriguing about those different, I'm sure the environments are different in both of those, serving in an education setting as well as a more of a clinical setting. What was it like being in the education setting? What did you like about it? What did you learn along the way?
Being in the education setting, the best part I would say would be the schedule, would be the teacher's schedule, obviously. And that way, you have a lot of students on your caseload, and you get to know a lot of really neat kiddos. But it can be a little bit overwhelming with the scheduling, with 60 different kids on your caseload. And it was wonderful to work with lots of supportive teachers. I miss that, being in home care right now. But learning, getting into IEP meetings and paperwork, that was the difficult part. But the kids, they're just always so excited to see you because you're the fun person that takes them out of class and play games. So they loved that part about it. And then we're in a hospital setting. You only get to see your patients for a short while in an acute care setting. A nursing home, you can see patients a lot longer. But I flock to that because I like the medical side of it. And I just think you see so much more interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. In the school, you do a lot of the same stuff repetitively. And so every once in a while, and with the adult population, you get thrown a curveball, and I kind of like that.
Well, let's take a look at some of the communication issues that a child might face that would bring them to a class like yours or a therapy
Sure.
In a school setting.
In a school setting, There can be several different ways that a teacher is usually the referral source for speech therapy. So they would either notice that they're not pronouncing a certain sound right. So a lot of people, you know, associate that with like a lisp on an S, or a R is a very common sound that is not pronounced correctly. And then also some children, their language isn't developing. You know, they're having trouble with pronouns or understanding verb tenses, things like that. And so we would start with an assessment, and depending on how severe the issue is and how it is impacting their education, then we would pick them up on our caseload. We also get referral sources from special education. So those typically are more of the language population. And also children on the autism spectrum, so those social language disorders where they're not able to pick up on social cues and understanding that those social language that seems natural for most of us.
So there are really a broad spectrum of things that you address in that therapy as well. Anything from something that might be like more of a physical in nature, to creating a sound, to how we actually use language and addressing, you know, whether it's a receptive or an expressive type of issue.
Absolutely.
Wow. That's just like a huge broad spectrum. How do you...
Jack of all trades, right. Master of none.
that's a lot to take in.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure for a child, you know, I'm thinking about, and you, as a parent as well, you're probably experiencing this now with a child who's starting to develop language skills and
Absolutely.
Speech skills as well.
The first setting I worked in was actually the early intervention in Illinois. And so that's the Birth to Three program. And so we get referrals from doctors or parents that are concerned about the child's language development. And again, you know, starting at 1 year, that's around the milestone where we look for the first word. And so based on that assessment at that point, we can go into the home and provide the same therapy services that someone would get in the school setting.
I was fascinated as a parent, before actually becoming a parent, learning that language development and speech development are not necessarily one and the same thing.
Correct.
That we start to develop language skills before we have the motor skills to speak.
Absolutely.
I didn't realize
it's
that.
Wild.
Yeah. and so, you know, learning other ways to communicate before we even start speaking, you know, to communicate with a baby, and what are the ways that they're trying to express themselves, because they don't necessarily have all those motor skills to speak.
Absolutely. And on a lot of the standardized assessments before 18, 15 months, gesture is counted a lot for expressive language.
Yeah, and let me tell you, with a newborn, there are lots of gestures, and as a parent, you're trying to interpret those and figure out what does that mean. What is it, especially as a first time parent, trying to figure out what does that mean? Well, being a parent now, has that changed how you look at some of these things? I know having all this wealth of knowledge from your education, has that changed? Are you always trying to try these things out on your little one?
Absolutely. It's also made me think back, like, oh, I probably should have been a little more patient with so-and-so.
Yeah, it's true. Being a parent does teach you patience as well, doesn't it? So you've served in a variety of settings. So you worked in an early intervention setting.
Correct.
And then did you work with then older students in a school as well?
Yes. Yes.
And now working with older adults in a hospital set or home?
I'm in home care right now. Yes.
So with those early children, those early years, early intervention, what are some of the things that, that, you know, a young child might encounter, or what are some signs that a parent might look for, to see, you know, are we developing the speech and language skills that we should at this stage? What should I talk to my pediatrician about? Do we need a referral to for speech pathology?
Very good. So definitely if the child has a history of lots of ear infections, you know, that's obviously going to have an impact on what they're receptive, what they understand, and their expressive language. Also, like I said before, that approximation. So when I say that, you know, they don't have to say the word perfectly, but making a gesture with a paired with a sound for that first word around 1 year. And then in about 18 months, having a vocabulary of anywhere between 15 to 20 words, identifying two body parts on themselves, imitating what they see the adults do in the home, that reciprocal play, that's a huge indicator of what they're understanding about what's going on around them. Those would be the big things really early on. We always say at 2 years, they should be putting two words together. So any combination of two words. And then
like
by
daddy milk.
Yeah, daddy milk. Perfect.
Now it's three words. Daddy milk, please.
Daddy milk now.
Yeah, that too. We've worked on that one.
Yes. Up until about 3 years old, there are a multitude of speech sound errors. Not everything has to be perfect. By about three, however, a child should be, 80 to 90% intelligible. So you should be understanding most of what they're saying. So that's at that cutoff, a lot of those simplification processes that children use. So they'll either, leave off the N sound of a word, mm-hmm. or they'll say dink for drink. Because that DR there on the front is...
Those R's are hard.
Those R's are hard, or top for stop. Those are some simplification processes that are normal up until about 3 years old.
What about using... This has been a fun one in our home lately. In strawberries. Those R's are hard.
Absolutely. That's a really hard word to say.
You know what our son calls them? Straw babies. Oh. And it's so adorable.
Don't like, ever stop.
Right.
That,
that's what my wife said. Please don't ever stop calling them straw babies. That's so cute. But, at some point in time, yes, he's going to have to learn how to say strawberries.
Absolutely. And R is definitely the last sound that comes in. So if it's not mastered by 7 or 8, that's when the concern. So, and there's a broad range of ages where sounds should be mastered. And so, the beginning sounds are usually those M's and P's and B's because they're both made with your lips together. Mm. They're very visual mm-hmm. for babies, and they're very easy to make. And then, going R is the very last one. It's all with the tongue inside the mouth. It's hard to teach. It's,
yeah, because you can't see.
You can't see it.
It's, right.
It's hard. It's a hard one.
L is probably right up there, too.
L and R are the last two. That's correct.
The way Americans speak and the English language, the way that Americans speak it, I can't imagine trying to learn it from coming from another culture.
Absolutely not.
As a second language.
It's crazy. We have rules. The English language has rules that no other language in the world has.
Well, especially when you Americanize it, then there are even more rules.
Absolutely.
For example, when you all, and then the plural of you all y'all. They didn't teach you that in speech pathology.
I didn't learn about that one.
Yeah, see. I have to go to my school of speech pathology. So, young children, there are certainly some markers to look for, and getting into the elementary and middle school. What about during those middle school and high school years? There might be some development issues, or for students as well as for adults, an injury or something like mm-hmm. that may cause a change in communication.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of injury, obviously a traumatic brain injury would be a huge impact on communication. But in school age years, if it's not a speech sound that we're working on, it's usually something tied in with reading or higher level language like synonyms and antonyms and figurative language, understanding those kinds of things. Writing is another thing we work on with a lot of older children. So once they understand those different verb tenses, it's a whole nother process to put it down on paper.
Absolutely.
So.
Wow. So usually by this point in time, if there's a development issue, it's probably already been identified by middle school, high school.
Yes. Yeah. And you would see it definitely... math and science might be okay, but, reading and writing, their literature scores might not be as good as the other two because, you know, there's not a whole lot of language with numbers, so.
What about as adults, in our young adult life to, you know, midlife, we'll get to older adults here and some of the issues they might face as well. I guess in that stage of life and human growth and development, this communication issues are probably primarily related to either illness or injury, right?
Absolutely. There are definitely some congenital things that, people, we aren't able to, help them to the point where everything is 100% where we would want it to be. But typically we don't see a whole lot of people in that population unless something, catastrophic has happened, like a brain injury or something, early acquired MS or Parkinson's, something, but usually it's not to the point yet where they really need our services yet.
I couldn't imagine what that would be like, though, that, you know, that transition in life, that change in life, having, regular communication abilities, hearing, speaking, seeing, all those things that we use in communication, and then, a traumatic brain injury or something else, an illness or something that causes a change in those senses, and then trying to overcome those challenges and barriers. Have you ever worked with clients that have faced something like that?
Absolutely. I had a patient recently. He had just turned 30, actually, and he had a diabetic coma situation and ended up with some encephalopathy. And, he just, his speech was, real slow and labored. And so we worked with him. The important thing with patients with that is getting them into a place like a rehab hospital or somewhere where they can get intensive therapy, all disciplines, PT, OT, and speech, two or three times a day, because the most crucial time is those first couple weeks after those events.
And I would imagine that takes motivation as well for the patient.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I can't imagine how frustrating that must be. I know the few times that I've had laryngitis, And then I just go off by myself. Uh-huh. But it's hard, when you have responsibilities, whether it's as a parent or in your work, and you temporarily lose that communication ability. Now, I have the advantage of knowing American Sign Language, but it also helps when the people around you know American Sign Language as well. Otherwise, it's kind of...
It's definitely to your advantage.
I can't imagine how challenging and frustrating that must be to experience a change in your communication abilities and then have to face, relearning a skill or relearning something like that. How do you face, how do you help a client with that? I know it's got to be challenging and frustrating.
Always looking to the positive, even if it's the smallest progress, any kind of light that you can give them, they have to stay motivated, because once they lose that motivation, unfortunately, the high incidence of depression with that population too. So, once we get going, keep encouraging them. Family support is huge. Working with them around the clock too. It's not only, what the therapists are able to do with them in our short time with them, but what family and other caregivers can do with them when we're not there.
Sure. That's a big extension of what's happening in the therapy. That's kind of like the homework.
Absolutely. The homework.
And that's, I'm sure, important as well. I appreciate that you pointed out that even just the little glimpse of, little progress markers that you can identify and celebrate can provide that motivation to keep going, keep trying. You've made some progress. Mm-hmm. Let's keep working on this. You're making some progress rather than regressing.
Absolutely. And my patients that focus on the progress are the ones that are successful. The ones that want to concentrate on that negative, it is usually not a pleasant or successful experience.
Yeah. I just can't get it. I just can't get it. It makes it harder even more to get it. I want to talk about what happens as in those older years of life and some of the issues we might face as well. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll take a look at how your profession in speech pathology and therapy might be helpful in those older years in life. We're talking with Rachel Weir, a speech pathologist here on Faith and Family. More conversation on the way. You're listening to Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration and action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
A medical researcher activist in Europe is advocating that people who've asked for euthanasia be able to donate their organs before they die. A beating heart is needed to secure fresh organs for transplantation, and this way they'll be able to sedate the person requesting euthanasia, then take out their organs, thus euthanizing them by organ donation. Of course, this will motivate more people to request euthanasia if a so-called good can come from it. A sickening proposal? It's already being done in America. Women contemplating abortion are more likely to do so if a perceived good can come from it. Harvesting of baby organs for experimentation is done immediately after the abortion to secure freshness, and abortion mills are eager to participate to get more business and income.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Do you believe that KFUO and the Worldwide Proclamation of the Gospel is worthy of your support? KFUO will be celebrating our worldwide ministry with Charathon 2016, a three-day live event Thursday, April 21st through Saturday, April 23rd. Listen on our worldwide stream and on AM 850 KFUO in St. Louis. Join us and enjoy all the live fun, plus hear from some of your favorite on-air friends. Again, Charathon 2016 is April 21st through April 23rd. If you can't listen live during our 3 days of Charathon, remember you can support us online anytime at KFUO.org. Just click a Give Now button on our website, or you can email us and ask us about other giving options. Email gifts at KFUO.org. It's KFUO supporters like you who make these worldwide online programs possible. Please prayerfully consider supporting KFUO today. And thank you for listening and supporting KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We are discussing overcoming communication disorders with Rachel Weir. She's a speech pathologist and has worked in a variety of settings with young children, those early years when they're just starting to develop those skills, as well as children in school setting and now adults and older adults. Before we went to break, we had just talked about some of the things that adults might face based on, as a result of an injury or an illness or even some congenital issues as well. What about when we get into those older years in life? What are some things that might face us, maybe because of health or other reasons that might affect our communication, especially when it comes to speech? What are some of those things that we might encounter?
I get a lot of strokes. I would say that's probably 75% of my caseload right now. Also, head and neck cancer. Lots of former smokers that have had some kind of surgery to either remove part or all of their tongue or jaw or larynx. So they're learning a new normal. Some of them still have to have a trach, so a hole in their neck to breathe. And others, we're doing compensatory strategies, you know, little tips and tricks to make them more understandable mm-hmm. to unfamiliar listeners. Dementia is another disease that I see quite frequently. As the disease progresses, it affects the patient's ability to communicate, but it also affects their swallowing. Parkinson's and other kind of neurological diseases, ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, progressive supranuclear palsy, things of that nature.
Did you have to take like a year of Latin to be able to to pronounce all of these words? I'm sure studying the linguistics along the way has helped.
No Latin, though, no.
So some that are more physical in nature, some that are more neurological in nature, mm-hmm. it sounds like.
Yes.
And trying to figure out how to compensate for some of those. Let's talk about stroke and some of the challenges as one might face in stroke and how you would help with that.
Sure. The communication deficits in someone with a stroke can be as different as day and night. So it could just be someone who, you know, is having a little bit of stuttering. There is a disorder called aphasia where mm-hmm. the person is having difficulty getting the words out. So I always kind of say it's like the words on the tip of their tongue, but they know what they want to say. They just can't get it out. It
happens here all the time. Happens to me every day.
I've had a few moments of that already. and so that can either be how they speak or what they understand as well. They could also have some cognitive deficits as a result of that stroke. So sometimes they can be very impulsive, not really aware of, okay, the whole left side of my body is affected, so I shouldn't just stand up and turn to my left because I'm going to fall over. And memory, reasoning. So that's a big one that we work with right now in the home. So they can be safe at home if they're going to be by themselves. And also if the stroke affects the muscles in the throat, then it will affect their swallowing as well. So
it seems to me, just as you were sharing this, that you probably work in a team setting.
Absolutely.
That you work with physical therapists, occupational therapists, assistants, you know, PTAs, mm-hmm. OTAs. How important is it to understand their profession and how you all, you know, how this all works together?
Oh, it has to be totally collaborative. We're talking all the time about the patient and where we want them to go, as far as goals, what our ultimate goal for the patient is, you know, are we going to discharge them so they're at home, but, you know, or do we need to look at maybe some assisted living facility or having a hired caregiver stay with them or family, things like that.
That, I would imagine, takes a lot of communication just in itself, whether you're
Absolutely.
Communicating electronically via email and things like that, or whether you're there at the same time, you know, in a clinical setting.
Absolutely. It's team all the way.
Well, and it helps that your partner in life too, your husband,
yes.
happens, he's an OTA too, isn't he?
He's a physical therapy assistant.
Oh, PTA.
Yes.
When you go home, do you all talk about this professional
stuff?
Yeah,
we talk shop. Uh-huh. Usually, unfortunately, it's usually related to documentation and insurance, but
the challenges that you face in that.
Absolutely. That's a whole nother talk for another day.
We'll spare the audience of all the documentation,
boring,
right?
Yes.
That's okay. We have documentation like that too in radio. It's probably not, it doesn't, not for insurance, but all those other legal documents we have to do. Well, so working in a team setting is certainly important. If you're considering a career in speech pathology, you have to like to work with others.
You have to like to work with others. That's right.
Whether it's your client or your the other therapist.
The team or their family.
Yeah.
Their family, absolutely.
We talked a little bit about, coping with stroke and the challenges one might face with that. You mentioned cancer and some of the results of that, maybe having surgery that has removed a muscle or bone or tissue or something mm-hmm. that affects speech and communication. Wow. How do you help with that?
I would say this is probably one of the most difficult populations to work with because these patients were completely normal up until the point that, you know, they found this cancer diagnosis. And, you know, they have this life-saving surgery, you know, mm-hmm. or they think, they are hoping it's going to be life-saving. And then, you know, when they get out of surgery, they as themselves look, they feel different, they look different a lot of the time. Sometimes they have a feeding tube and, you know, they're breathing out of this hole in their neck. And it's a lot of counseling as well as getting their speech and back to where they want it to be. But then again, if they're planning on doing any kind of radiation treatment, that again is going to affect the muscles and the tissues in that area. So they go through a lot of hills and valleys. Hmm. And it's more counseling about what's to come. And again, staying positive, doing your exercises, and just getting to that new normal, because a lot of the times it's not going to be what it was before.
Sure. Lots of things have changed. Maybe, outwardly, it may appear to be just one thing that looks different, but yeah, how your body responds to all those things mm-hmm. and how you feel about those makes a difference in how you go about adapting to it.
Absolutely. Attitude is everything. Right, Dad?
What about, you mentioned dementia earlier as well. What are some of the communication issues or speech issues that might come up when facing dementia?
Usually it begins as kind of a mild aphasia, so that word finding again. And as it progresses, it ends up being, they're speaking in things that you don't really understand. They're saying a lot of words without saying mm-hmm. something. So that thing over there is doing this. Well, you're saying words, but nobody knows what you're talking about.
It has very little to do
very little meaning what? Or mm-hmm. yes. And they don't understand as well, what you're talking about. That short-term memory, being able to comprehend and remember what their conversation partner is talking about, that also begins to subside.
So how do you help with that? Is there anything you can do to help with that?
There's no cure, but there are things that we can do to, you know, help caregivers, mm-hmm. Strategies, and therapy, you know, kind of staves off the decline a little bit. So we instruct caregivers on things that they can do to help. Things like, you know, listening to music, looking at old photo albums, doing hobbies, playing card mm-hmm. games, things that acquire a little bit of memory and attention.
I just talked with our friends from Lutheran Senior Services on Monday about their music and memory program at Little League Groves here in the St. Louis area. And I was just amazed at how they shared the vast improvement for some of the residents who just through listening to, you know, a playlist on an iPod for, mm-hmm. you know, 25 minutes, half an hour, how that was very calming and then enabled them to interact and engage more.
Absolutely. Music is wonderful. For that yeah. population.
Have you ever worked with a music therapist?
I have not in home care. When I was in the school setting, we used a music therapist a little bit. And I mean, obviously the kids loved it. But music, it's very, you know, linguistically, it's simple. And mm-hmm. When we do nursery rhymes and things, those are things that are embedded in our long-term memory. So they're usually easy to access for younger kids and older adults.
That was what I was going to ask next. Are there things that you use with young children that you also use with adults and older adults?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just how you present it.
Sure. This is nursery rhymes and things like that. Can you give me an example of something you would have done, you know, with the young school children that you still use in your home care?
Oh, sure. Well, on top of nursery rhymes and singing, identifying pictures. So giving the child or the adult, you know, a field of two or four pictures and having them, you know, point to the fish, point to the shoe.
Do you ever have a client look at you and say, are you serious?
No.
find the fish.
Usually a caregiver is, you know, thinking, oh, that's way too simple for them. But when they see them struggling, you know, that's kind of when you can see it. It hits home.
I see. Yeah. And then you build from there.
And you build from there. That's right. That's right.
And he says, that's a bluegill. Which one? So there are, it sounds like a myriad of challenges that we can face when it comes to communication, especially in those latter years. We talked about dementia. You mentioned ALS and Parkinson. I would imagine some similar issues, similar challenges that you face in dementia as well.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There is a Parkinson's type of dementia as well. But both of those diseases are progressive as well, like dementia. And so those two diseases are really about, you know, future planning, like getting communication boards and communication mm-hmm. devices set up, things like that.
So if one is diagnosed with ALS or Parkinson and you're concerned about future communication, you can look into a device, work with a therapist to find out if there's technology to help with communicating in the future that wouldn't require speech, but could use something like recorded speech.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then as your physical abilities also decline, then, you know, they can use eye gaze and blinking, mm-hmm. things like that. Lots of cool stuff out there.
It's amazing how technology has changed over, you know, just even just the last decade. Have you seen that in your
absolutely,
career?
Absolutely. Especially in the area of communication devices. And now, you know, we have apps that, you know, for mm-hmm. iPads that we can use for aphasia therapy or, you know, across the whole spectrum of our patients, really.
I mean, who doesn't carry a phone with them? Even if you don't have
day.
One, somebody around you surely has one mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. can be used for just overcoming a simple communication barrier. I remember working in higher education, and one of my colleagues pointed out that many computers, you can actually plug two keyboards into a computer to communicate. Did you know that?
I did not.
Like just a typical, you know, desktop computer, you can plug in two keyboards so that you can each, instead of sliding a keyboard back and forth to type to one another, you can share the screen but have two keyboards, and both of you can then type on the screen what it is you're trying to communicate. Who would
That's
have
amazing.
Thought?
No.
How simple, you know, something we take for granted every day, a keyboard that we use on our computer. But yeah, just add another keyboard and mm-hmm. it gives another person a chance to communicate via typing. It's almost like texting, but you're sharing a screen. Texting, you know, people use that to communicate
that's
as well.
That's right. And some of my patients, that's their goal that mm-hmm. they want to work toward. I want to be able to text on my phone again. let's do it.
That's a noble goal,
exactly.
Right? So they can communicate, I bet, with grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. If you want to talk to grandkids, texting. Any stories from the field, you know, from your work in the field that have just really made you say, this is what my profession is about. This is why I love what I do.
Absolutely. A recent one, I had a 94-year-old man, and when I met him, he had been discharged home from the hospital and rehab, and he had fallen on his back patio and broken every bone in his face.
Hmm.
Poor guy. And so he was not able to eat, and he had a feeding tube, and he had many surgeries. So, you know, that area was inflamed, and so he was starting... went with me, we were going to progress to getting rid of the feeding tube and eating by mouth. So over 5 weeks, we did our swallow rehabilitation exercises. And when I discharged him, he was eating a cookie and ice cream, and his feeding tube was getting removed by his doctor the next week. So
I bet that was a glorious day.
It was awesome. And I mean, so 94, you know, some people have written him off, you know, too old. There's no rehabilitation potential there. But, I mean, he did amazing. And then, you know, kiddos that when you first meet them who, are, you know, they can be angry because they have so much they want to say,
mm-hmm.
but they're not able to get it out. And working with them over months, you know, and this is more in the early intervention side, months, and with mom and dad and finally getting them able to say, you know, two or three words, and, you know, mom and dad just lighting up
yeah.
is amazing.
I bet.
It's the best feeling in the world.
Well, Rachel, we are all out of time, but I have certainly learned a lot. I hope our listeners have as well. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
It was a pleasure.
Rachel, we're a speech pathologist. Come back anytime. Love to talk more, and maybe you can help me with some of my speech issues as well. Thanks for being my guest.
Thank you.
Faith and Family wrapping up. We're going to talk with our friends here at Worldwide KFUO about the exciting Share-a-thon 2016 coming up in just a little bit, and Thy Strong Word on the way as well.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.
Hi, this is President Matthew Harrison. It's with a thankful heart that I share my gratitude to all of you who so faithfully serve the Lord as volunteers within the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We are so blessed by your generous and gifted spirit, and we are uplifted by your volunteer service to make known the love of Christ. May God bless and fortify you in your service. May your service bring you joy.
Human beings often bristle at the idea of needing a shepherd. Pride and independence reject that, but at the same time, something in the soul longs for a good shepherd. Much of the music on The Next Sing for Joy is about a good shepherd. I hope you'll join us.
Sundays at noon on KFUO, the messenger of good news.
I'm Andy Bates. Joining me in studio today, I started to say Mary Harwell. It's Mary. It's kind of the combination of Joni Harwell and Mary Schmidt here to talk about Share-a-thon. Mary, welcome.
Good morning, Andy.
And Joni, welcome.
Good morning. Actually, I have a cousin, Mary Harwell.
Do you? She's not here today, though.
She's not here today.
It's the combined embodiment of Joni Harwell and Mary Schmidt, our development team here at KFUO, and excited to talk about Share-a-thon 2016. I feel like we need an echo when I say that.
Yes, that's right. Share-a-thon, thon, thon, thon.
About a week, well, I guess it's a week and a day away. Mm-hmm. I think I incorrectly said a week away earlier, but it kind of starts at the end of the day on Wednesday, right? When we're all set up and ready to go. It starts on Thursday next week.
Thursday next week, April 21st, 22nd, and 23rd are the days of our Share-a-thon.
Share-a-thon, this has been going on, I think you shared with me last year, Joni, how many years this has been
going
on.
It's over 25 years. I went back and found some information. It actually started with Paul Devanteer, our Share-a-thons, mm-hmm. and then we have continued. It was, well, whatever it is, that makes over 25 years. I think this is like our 26th year, our 27th year of doing Share-a-thon. And it's always an exciting time, a fun time. Not to say it isn't a lot of work, because mm-hmm. it is. But I think the neatest thing, especially for Mary and me, is we get to talk to so many of our partners on the telephone. And that's really fun, because you like to make that connection. These mm-hmm. are the people who are working with us to share the gospel message around the world. And we just really enjoy having that opportunity to chat with them on the phone as they call in with their pledges or tell us what they like about KFUO. And we just look forward to it.
I agree. I had such a wonderful time this past fall when we had a chance to meet so many of our listeners and our day sponsors, to meet them face to face as many of them were coming in, and I got to greet them and say, oh, hi, I'm Andy Bates. And so many of them, oh, you're Andy. I listen to you all the time. I listen to you every day. It was so nice to meet them and meet all these people who make up this broadcast ministry of Worldwide KFUO. Yes, there are, you know, there's a handful of us here in the building that work to do a lot of the technical things and produce programs and that sort of thing. But there are so many more people that make up Worldwide KFUO, and that's our listeners and who partner with us.
That's correct. And we, you know, the important thing is we We hope you call in with your pledge. We thank you for that pledge. And we do need the support to keep the station going. But it's that partnership. We're in this together. Mm-hmm. We're working. We happen to be at the radio station, but our partners happen to be out there supporting us, praying mm-hmm. for us. We are all in this together. It's many pieces of the pie put together to make the pie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We, you know, the partnerships that we have, you mentioned that we need these in order to keep going, but not just to keep going. I mean, yes, we want to keep proclaiming the good news of Jesus, but we want to reach further. We want to reach yes. more people. And, you know, when there's new technology, we embrace that and see what, you know, the new technology is going to do. What, you know, there's a new format or something that new when it comes to broadcasting on the internet and that sort of thing. We watch those things and see what's going to be strong and where we can use those to proclaim the good news of Jesus. Well, in order to do that, that takes resources. And we're so grateful for the partners who embrace that future with us, who see that there's a new technology. What can we do with it? How can we use it to proclaim the good news of Jesus, to reach people that have not heard that good news of Jesus? So it really is about looking to the future as well, not just continuing doing what we're doing, but also seeking those new opportunities as well.
That's true. It's Shareathon is going to be a great opportunity for people to come in and partner with KFUO, especially as we do exactly that kind of outreach with mm-hmm. the gospel and the word of Jesus Christ across the globe. And there are many ways of doing that. We have obviously our radio and our internet connection, but we also have podcasts. You mm-hmm. can get us on our KFUO app on your smartphone. There are quite a few ways that you can listen, and then there are also ways that you can share the message of KFUO by telling other people and saying, right. Oh, it's so easy to get. All you got to do is go online at kfuo.org, or here, try this podcast, or there's an easy app for your phone mm-hmm. if you want to listen on the go, or if you want to listen whenever you feel like listening. There's ways of doing it.
Mary, I know you hear from a lot of our listeners that whether it's a phone call or an email or a letter, you know, sent through the mail, that you hear from them. And is there any, you know, you mentioned all the different ways that we can listen. Is there one particular way that really stands out? Is it listening on the radio? Is it listening online? Is it listening to the podcast that when you hear from our listeners, is there something that really seems to stick out?
Really, it's across the board. We have a lot of people who love to download the mm-hmm. podcasts on their phone, on their iPhone app. And it's convenient. We have an automatic uploader, I guess you could mm-hmm. call it, where every time we upload the audio, it automatically goes to your KFUO app and lets you know that there's a new show
right.
program
Ding,
waiting for
then,
you to
yeah.
listen to. We have a lot of people who love the radio itself, that they get on either their Wi-Fi radio or their regular radio here in St. Louis. Or actually, we have a lot of people who like listening on the internet, and they listen maybe while at work or mm-hmm. on their break or during lunch. So it's really across the board, actually. It's very nice.
What are we going to do during 3 days of Shareathon? Three fun-filled days. I have a blast at Shareathon because I get to see so many people and talk to so many people.
Well, that's it. I mean, we have so many special guests coming in to talk about KFUO. We have Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the LCMS, will be in to spend some time with us. We'll have Pastor John Lekomsky and Warren Worth, and Tom Baker will be here, of course, and Reverend Mark Smith. We also have Paul Clayton, who used to work at KFUO, who will be spending an hour with us. And I know somebody wrote an email the other day and said they're so happy that mm-hmm. Paul's going to be here because they want to be able to hear him on the air. Professor Andy Bartelt from Concordia Seminary, who has been the voice of our Sunday morning Bible study for so many years, has graciously consented, because I know he's very busy, to coming and being with us for 2 hours. And we actually kind of want to thank him, because he will soon be leaving the air of KFUO, because he's going to be moving and he will not be doing the Sunday morning Bible study after May 8th. But we certainly want to thank him for all that he has done and the many, many people who have written and have been thankful for that program. So lots of different people will be calling in, special people, Tim Hetzner from Lutheran Church Charities, Pastor Don Johnson from Lutheran Indian Ministries, Dr. Jack Fiennes, who I know is a guest on your program very often, Mike Thurtle from Bethesda Lutheran Communities. So just lots of people who somehow are involved with KFUO. In many cases, KFUO is a blessing to their organization in helping to get messages out about those organizations. And so we're thankful that they can all be with us. Again, the dates are?
April 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, is next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Coming up very soon. I'm excited. A lot of new guests this year, host of the Student Union. Pastor Marcus Zill is going to be here. He's going to help us kick off things at the very beginning on Thursday. The president of the Missouri District, Dr. Lee Hagen, will be joining us here in studio. The new executive director of Lutherans for Life, a familiar voice here at KFUO on morning and evening prayer, Pastor Salamink and Mrs. Salamink, hopefully, as well, will be joining us for that first day as well. Lots of fun guests. It really is. It's kind of like a family reunion when we all get together.
Yes, it is. And we actually on that Saturday have a special gift coming in from a congregation. And we're looking forward to that.
Very good. Well, thank you both for being here today.
Worldwide KFUO, a click away, 24 hours a day. Originating from the studios of KFUO Clayton, St. Louis, the messenger of good news.